Yo, Jay, hit it. Let's go.
This speech is my recital. I think it's very vital to rock
a rhyme.
That's right.
On top.
It's tricky. It's the
play. Here we go. It's tricky to rock a rhyme. To rock a rhyme. That's right. On time. It's tricky. It's tricky.
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 Hello everyone, welcome to Fishin', the podcast where we discuss Modern's most competitive tribe and help the whole community become better merfolk players. I'm not Cody Smith on Twitter, and we have on through the airwaves my co-host Matt. How are you doing, Matt?
I'm doing all right. Opened up my first box of Dominaria, and I think I pulled every bulk rare that was in the set. No value cards. And I think we were talking on the podcast last week how I was like really looking forward to getting as much mini rat colonies as possible because it's a common. Yeah, I opened up a whole box and didn't pull a single rat colony. So,
oh geez, that stinks.
And I'm not, this isn't hyperbole. I pulled no rat colonies. It's my life.
And you can all jeer at him for his inability to open a single common at Matthew Caudill 8. On Twitter, and then you can also always contact us at FishcastMTG on Twitter, Instagram, and Facebook. Find us on YouTube, where you know we have gameplay videos, and we also put the podcast up there. We also, I always forget to tell people, click that little bell because that's how you get the notifications that we put up a video. And remember to rate and subscribe wherever you listen to podcasts: Stitcher Radio, Apple Podcasts, YouTube, Google Play. Whatever podcast device you use, go there and rate us. It definitely helps people hear the good news about our watery friends. Speaking of support, we have a new patron, and Stephen V has decided to support us on Patreon. Thank you very much, Stephen.
Yay, Stephen!
Yes, and he actually he picked the random merfolk, as is. I did clap. It just, I don't clap as loud as you do. So we actually, I got in touch with Steven and we picked he picked his random merfolk, and he said, I want number 113. And I'm not even going to make up a story because I think that just the merfolk being picked is a story in itself. So I had to switch to Scryfall because the app that I used to determine the random merfolk stopped showing. It used to, in the upper corner, had, you know, X out of 112 or whatever. So it would tell me, you know, which one I was at so I could pick the random merfolk. So I went to Scryfall, and Scryfall actually uses that if there was merfolk ever in the type line anywhere, like in the flavor text. So now we're up to 244 cards. So
that's kind of fun, though.
Yeah, no, it expands our picks, and I mean, it even adds tokens. So like, there's like the Merfolk Wizard token, you know. So that's kind of interesting. So of course, I'm scrolling through there, and I get to the hundreds, and I get to the 120s, and then I get to Merfolk number 133, which was Steven's pick, and who is it? But Merfolk Trickster.
Wait a second. Aren't we gonna talk about Merfolk Trickster, like a whole episode about Merfolk Trickster?
That's what this whole episode is about. I recounted to make sure, like, you know, because it shows, you know, a certain number per page. So I was like, skip, you know, oh yep, that's it. So here we are.
So now, Cody, you have to put in, it's free to rock around, all right, it's tricky. Just throughout the entire episode.
Just put it on a loop for 45 minutes.
Exactly.
So for
run
those
DMC
of you,
tricky, 45 minutes with us talking over it.
Oh, geez. I don't know if that'd be listenable.
Monetized.
Yeah. Well, we're not monetized on YouTube anyway, so they can take all the money, all the ad dollars they want from us, the pennies, the piles of pennies,
all that Monopoly money.
So Merfolk Trickster, we might as well just get into it because this basically jumpstarts our episode. Is blue for a uncommon Merfolk Wizard, and it's a 2/2, and it has Flash. When Merfolk Trickster enters the battlefield, tap target creature and opponent controls. it loses all abilities until end of turn. So yeah, that's it. I mean, I don't know how much we should talk about it right now, because we're like Matt said, we're basically going to be doing a whole episode about how good Merfolk Trickster is. So I think
or the potential of how good it could be. No, I agree with you. Let's pause right now on this. The irony cannot be lost, and we're not screwing around on this. This was completely random, the most random of the random Merfolk. So.
That's the universe getting back at us a little bit, I think. And Steven actually kind of skirted the rules of our Patreon by actually getting an episode, a full episode about what he wanted, I guess, in a weird way. So congratulations to Steven. You won the random universe die roll.
So we will spend about probably 15, 20 minutes talking about Merfolk Trickster here in a little bit. But there are a few other things we wanted to touch on real quick.
Yes, like Stuart Brinkman placed at a Star City Games Legacy Classic, didn't he?
He did. So one of the things that I like to do is I follow the big tournaments pretty closely just to see how certain decks that I'm thinking about potentially buying into. Or,
is this Matt Sports Corner?
A little bit.
Matt Sports Corner.
There you go. Foosball. But anyway, so I always keep an eye out for the fish decks because I am the co-host of a Merfolk podcast. I guess I should.
Who told you?
Pay attention a little bit. Let's be honest, it's been kind of a desert recently for Merfolk finishes in major tournaments. So I saw this in a Legacy tournament nonetheless, in a fairly big one. So awesome. I'm happy to see it. It was a pretty stock list. It was actually very similar to your list, Cody. It ran two smuggles. I think we were talking about it off air. The only difference between his list and your list were the two dazes and the jit, correct?
Yeah, I don't run daze or Umezawa's jite. There's also some jit. Whatever, people know what I'm talking about. That's the important part. There was also a couple things in the sideboard, like Ashen Rider, kind of being sneak and show a secret tech. You know, a lot of people just have one of that in the sideboard, even in decks that can't cast it. You know, you just kind of, if you're playing against sneak and show, you basically just mull till you have it, and then you just kind of, they're like, all right, here's my Grizzlebrand, and you're like, sweet.
Ashen Rider.
Here's my Ashen Rider, and you just kind of hose them a little bit. So,
yeah,
it's a good deck. I mean, it's very similar to my deck, and there's not a whole lot of variation in Legacy Merfolk.
No, exciting to see. Hopefully, it's the start of a trend. I think we've talked about this before. I think Merfolk in Legacy is actually decently positioned to at least be more of a type tier two deck than it has been recently, rather than like just a fringe deck. So hopefully we'll start seeing it creep back up in the standings a little bit. I have no illusions that it's going to displace the Grixis Delvers, or the Sneak and Shows, or the four color Delvers, or the two color Delvers, or the other Delver variants that are in Legacy right now. But if it can join the ranks of maybe like the Allurans or the food chain combos or something like that, that'd be kind of cool to see.
And not this coming Friday, but the Friday after is Legacy at my FNM or at my local game store, DZ Comics. Shameless plug. So I'm actually gonna test four of in my list just to report back and see how it does. I think there's enough stuff in Legacy that it'll have
four of what?
Oh, sorry, four of Merfolk Trickster, what we're talking about in this episode. I should be more clear, and thank you very much for... Yeah. But I do think that there's a lot of things that Merfolk Trickster would be specifically good against in Legacy. And I'm...
One thing that we talked about that we actually messed up on a few weeks ago when we talked about Merfolk Trickster is that Merfolk Trickster actually does hit Imrakul. So...
Yeah, so I pulled up the rules, the rulings for Emrakul, and Protection from colored spells means that Emrakul can't be the target of colored spells, including colored aura spells, or of abilities whose sources are colored spells, such as when you cast ability of an Ulamog, and that's been turned red by Painter's Servant. I don't know why that's the one that they chose. That's a really convoluted example. But, you know, so it'd be something like Deflecting Palm, because it says Deflecting Palm deals damage, and Deflecting Palm is a colored spell. However, Merfolk Trickster's ability is as a creature, which is, you know, a creature isn't a spell. So it's one of those things that it'll help us stop having to play Ashen Rider as our hoser card for Sneak and Show. And I think it'll just be cool against cards like Deathrite Shaman, against elves. You know, that there's lots of ways that Merfolk Trickster can be used in Legacy, I think.
Right. Absolutely. I think the biggest issue now is because, as we've said, the deck list is pretty tight. So where does he fit in? But I think that's a conversation for a different day.
Yeah, we're definitely discussing Merfolk Trickster in Modern today. I did want to start off with its semi similarity to Tidebinder Mage, which we've had since M14. And Tidebinder Mage has kind of come and gone in main boards and in sideboards. It's a meta call. And Tidebinder Mage is almost the same in every way. It's blue-blue for a Merfolk Wizard. That's a 2-2. When it enters the battlefield, you tap target red or green creature an opponent controls. That creature doesn't untap during its untap step for as long as you control Tidebinder Mage. So they're very similar cards, functionally. Obviously, Tidebinder Mage is a little bit more narrow because it only targets certain types of creatures.
You get into the sideboard. You get in that sideboard and you stay there.
No, it's definitely...
You stay there till you see a Goyf.
Yeah, it's definitely in a sideboard or in a main board where you're the only blue deck. I don't know of a game store that has only one Merfolk player and the rest of the people are playing like Jund and Burn.
If you walk in before you submit your deck list and everybody else says we're playing Jund today, then, you know, just grab your Tidebinder out of your binder and throw it in the main deck.
Yeah, that's. but generally you wouldn't be running Tidebinder Mage in the main board. We are, however, going to be running Merfolk Trickster in the main board for my testing. I've been running as a 4-of, and I've been really impressed with how it works. It's one of those things that, like, my expectations were very high, and They did get met to some extent.
So, and I will say that my expectations were okay. I thought it was gonna be more of a sideboard card at first. they've actually gotten a little bit higher. I think he's gonna be better than what I thought. I'm still not 100% sold, but I think we're getting closer.
Now one thing that we wanted to touch on before we get into how it fits in the deck is that this is a very complex card. There's a lot going on with Merfolk Trickster. And so, you know, there's lots of things about, like, how, like, when do you play Merfolk Trickster? You know, there's
opponent's turn.
Well, yeah, on your opponent's turn, like, if possible. But
when you have two untapped blue mana.
Yeah, that's also another.
Or an Aether Vial with two counters. That's when you play him.
Are you done?
Yeah.
I'm done. No, you're right on all counts. But we did want to discuss the different types of abilities, because obviously, you can go on Reddit. There's a sticky thread of the 101 uses of Merfolk Trickster, and I mean, name a creature in Modern, right? And I mean, it pretty much deals with every creature in Modern in a very powerful way. I mean, even just turning off creatures for a turn in Modern is backbreaking in a lot of situations.
Well, especially in Fish, when a lot of your losses are you're a swing away from winning.
Yes. And
it buys you one turn.
So real quick, I want to talk about the difference between activated abilities and triggered abilities, because this is kind of what this gives you the heads up on when you should be using Merfolk Trickster. So the first type of ability are triggered abilities. So Matt, could you elaborate on what a triggered ability is?
A triggered ability is something that, for layman's terms, just kind of happens. So something enters the battlefield and it triggers something to occur. An example I like to use is like Norn the Weary, because I play Chaos Norn in my EDH. His ability is a triggered ability. When a spell is cast or a creature attacks, it triggers him to exile himself and then come back in at the end of turn. So there's no manual effort in doing it. For example, you can play the forget test. So you can't forget for that ability to happen. If somebody casts a spell, it's happening no matter what.
Yeah, it's checked by state-based actions. Is that correct?
Correct.
So the other one that I have here is I have two examples. One is Young Pyromancer. So it's just whenever you cast an instant or sorcery spell, you create a 1/1 elemental creature token. That's just something that happens, you know, when you cast an instant or sorcery. Yep. And Primeval Titan, which is four green for a 6/6 with trample. And when he enters the battlefield or attacks, you may search your library for up to 2 land cards and put them onto the battlefield tapped, then shuffle your library. That's just something that happens. So
another one that a lot of people run into issues with are the Eldrazi that would have the cast abilities. Like Imrakul, when you cast it, you take the extra turn. Or Nulamog, when you cast him, exile two permanents. And a lot of people get frustrated because they'll be like, counter. It's like, okay, well, I still get to exile two things. No, you don't. And then it's like, no, it's a triggered ability. It's a state based. It's gonna happen. Sorry.
Yeah. So next are activated abilities. And actually, I didn't put the definition of an activated ability down there. But basically, the way you remember the difference between an activated ability and a triggered ability is activated abilities have a cost associated with them. So it can be tap a creature, or it could be pay a certain amount of mana, or pay a certain amount of life. The two examples I have are Llanowar Elves. Tap, add green to your mana pool. I guess now it's just add green. They errated, but I have the OG Llanowar Elves in our show notes, which you can.
I appreciate that. That's the only Llanowar Elves I recognize.
You could see these show notes if you are a $5 and up patron at patreon.com/fishcastmtg. The other
for
example,
all $5 patrons, I actually did add some things to the show notes today.
Yes, he did. and I don't know if anyone actually looked, because it doesn't tell me if people looked. It just tells me if there's been edits made. So go ahead and get in there if you're a $5 or up patron.
Just lie to us. Just say you've been looking. Even if you're not even a $5 patron, don't have access.
So the other one I have is this one isn't from Modern, but it's Deathrite Shaman. It's a pretty common creature that has a lot of activated abilities. I said it right the first time. What am I doing?
Doubt yourself. Never doubt yourself.
I run a professional podcast, dang it.
Take it.
Yep. And so you know, Deathrite Shaman has a bunch of abilities. You can exile a land to add mana to your aether, I guess now. It's not the mana pool. You can exile instants or sorcery to ping your opponent for 2, or you can exile creatures to gain 2 life. So basically, it all comes down to...
The way I like to think about it is, are you allowed to forget about it? So if a turn passes and then the judge gets called over, are you going to have to do the thing that you forgot? Or the judge can be like, sorry, you forgot. Don't forget next time.
Yes.
For a good example would be like Howling Mine. If you're playing like a Rack deck like a Black Vice deck, and you don't draw the extra card, the judge gets called over. They're going to say, you didn't draw your extra card? You didn't draw a card. Do it. You're going to lose some life, because that's how the game works. Whereas like, oh, I meant to do that with my Deathrite, I just forgot. Sorry. Don't forget next time.
Shout out to my buddy Sean in San Antonio, who played a Black Vice deck in Modern for a while.
No, he played a Hate Rack.
Oh, Hate Rack, yeah. Well, similar yeah. Premise, but yeah, Sean's rack deck was pretty cool. I liked it a lot. Anyway, so making sure to understand the difference between activated and triggered abilities is key to making Merfolk Trickster work for you. The main thing is, if you know if it's just activated abilities, you need to pay attention. If it's a triggered ability, you need to pay attention. What causes that ability to trigger? So in decks like one of the games, I'm in the middle of testing Merfolk Trickster for myself, but one game I played against Mardu Pyromancer. And so what I did was, on Moto, I put a stop at my opponent's upkeep so that I could flash in Merfolk Trickster and turn off Young Pyromancer for a turn. And so that he's obviously not going to attack with Young Pyromancer, but it does stop him from getting a bunch of tokens. And that's kind of the best case scenario against, you know, Young Pyromancer. But if you wait, you know, they're still going to get value off of it. And they could probably bolt it in response, you know, and still get tokens and just fire off a bunch of instants and still get all the tokens that they need. So just, you know, keep that in mind when you're playing against your opponents. So one thing that we need to look into is, you know, why do we want to run Merfolk Trickster? What does Merfolk Trickster do for modern Merfolk that we didn't have access to in that context before? Because, I mean, obviously there are cards that do similar effects. But, you know, what makes Merfolk Trickster better than other cards to be played in modern Merfolk?
Well, I mean, he's got the ability on the body. He's got flash, so it makes... and his ability in general makes him more control-y, which is very nice for Merfolk right now. Mm-hmm. And then, as you said before, he's the 2-blue, which for Merfolk is absolutely nothing, which helps out my best friend, the card I love most in the deck, Master of Waves.
You have to write that ship, Matt. That's everybody. People have jumped on you for that, for not liking Master of Waves, which actually is doing a kind of okay right now.
He's better now, so I mean, in his current meta, he's better. Okay, we're not getting into this. You're not going to take me down this road.
You're right. It does give more pips for Master of Waves.
Real quick, my best review that we ever got, it was on Reddit. It was like, yeah, those guys seem kind of cool, but the one guy doesn't think Master Waves is good. So what do they really know about this?
Yeah, that was definitely pretty good. I'll have to try and dig out that thread.
I thought it was hilarious.
Somebody very cautiously approaching the podcast, saying, "I don't know how good they are if they don't think Master of Waves is any good." But one other thing that I like to point out is that it grounds flyers, which Merfolk has historically not played a lot of flyers, and so, you know,
the fact that they haven't printed a flying fish is just asinine to me.
Well, there is one. There's one in Ixalan. It's a 2/1 that has flying if you control another Merfolk.
The fact that they haven't printed a good flying fish is asinine to me.
Well, and there's that one from Zendikar that's riding that giant bird. But there's definitely a severe lack of flying fish.
If we haven't gotten to the random Merfolk and it's a piece of garbage card, if it's toddler fodder, I don't know about it.
It's definitely not great. No. I think it has 8 mana, all of your creatures gain flying or something like that.
Oh, that's right. We did talk about that one.
We have talked about it. I think it has been a random Merfolk.
It was so bad I forgot about it. Okay, yeah, you're right. I remember it now.
But you know, so
because my son played with all of them and destroyed every copy.
Yeah. Yeah, well, you know, that's what happens when you have kids.
Yeah.
So like I said, you know, I mean, it even just grounding a Lingering Souls token or a Spell Queller or the Freebooter, you know, so you can get an extra card off of humans. It's also actually pretty good against humans against Reflector Mage. and Reflector Mage and Meddling Mage, because you can turn off their abilities.
Yeah.
So
I'm thinking, like, how cool would it be to see against like Bant Eldrazi, and they play Reality Smasher, and then they think they're going to win because they're going to smash in with a haste. It's like, no haste. You can't attack this turn, and I have lethal.
Yep. And I think that really kind of is what makes Merfolk Trickster, or the best argument for Merfolk Trickster, is that one thing that a lot of people that approach Merfolk for the first time or watch it get it played and don't know the intricacies of the deck, they think that Merfolk is an aggro deck. And that's just blatantly not the case. It's a tempo deck.
It depends on who's playing it.
Yes. Well, generally, if you're playing it well, you're playing it like a tempo deck. At least in my opinion. But I mean, if you watch high level
in the comments.
Yeah, let us know how wrong I am. But I mean, if you watch players like Merfolk Joe and Hrothgar 13 or I mean,
that guy who just did 100 episodes of something, or
yeah, Pikachu. Who knows if he's gonna stick around? Wait, this Pikachu. Wait,
Arthur? Is it Arthur from the Tick? Is
that it? I'm trying to think of who else I was thinking of. But anyway, like when you watch these high level Merfolk players that are really invested in the deck, you know, they're being very careful about, like, okay, so how many things can I attack with this turn? And you know, there's a lot of things to consider. So you're not just like, I'm just going to slap all the fish on the table and turn them sideways, you know, shove so many tuna up their butts so that they get mercury poisoning. You know, that's not how the deck works. And as you said, you know, we can just, one of the most simple uses of Merfolk Trickster is play it end of turn, tap down one of their biggest dude, and then untap and have another body.
Well, yeah, I mean, it's a crappy time walk. But a crappy time walk is still a time walk.
Yeah, I mean,
it buys you a turn. I mean, it's and that's, again, in modern, as fast as modern is now, one turn is absolutely massive.
I mean, how cool would it be to have your opponent, like, discard their hand to get out a hollowed one, and then you just go, eh, sorry. I think that would just be super sweet. But you're right. Like, you know,
And you get your free attack, because most likely you're going to have something turn to an island, or they'll have an island down. You have island walk. They can't block you.
Yeah.
And you have another 2/2 body, which might be a 2/2,
a 3/3 or 4/4.
4/4 at that point. Yeah.
Yeah. So I think it complements what the deck already wants to do, because it gives us more bodies that get pumped, more bodies that are affected by island walk effects, and we can just kind of waltz past our opponent's creatures in most situations.
Or you make more elemental tokens.
Yep. Or make a boatload of elemental tokens. There's a couple other things, like with Mirror Reedry, you're basically tapping two creatures, or you can tap down their lands.
Yep.
So I mean, obviously you could already tap down their lands, but you know, you're getting double the triggers off of playing Merfolk Trickster with a Mirror Reedry out. One other thing that you can do is with Harbinger of the Tides, it's a pretty cool little effect there that you can tap something and then bounce it. So in our example with Hollowed One, where they spend a turn, you know, drawing and discarding and all that, and you know, doing all that nonsense to get a Hollowed One out, and then you go Merfolk Trickster, Harbinger of the Tides, bounce it back to your hand. You know, they spent their whole and like you said, we time walked them.
Mm-hmm.
So I'm totally down for that. And I mean, you know, being realistic, Matt, as I know you are, you're always the guy who drags me down from magical Christmas land into the blasted hellscape that is modern. You know, the reality. The Mad Max style wasteland of actual modern play. There are times where Merfolk Trickster isn't the best.
Oh yeah, no. yeah. Let's see. Storm, probably not that great.
You're right. It probably doesn't do a whole lot against. Well, I mean, it can turn off a brawl.
It can turn off a
brawl or goblin electro.
Brawl?
Brawl.
I wouldn't play him in brawl. Maybe. I mean, maybe he's good in brawl. I don't know.
I think you play it because there just aren't that many merfolk. I'm playing it in my brawl deck.
But yeah, no. I mean, it could hit a brawl or a electromancer, which again, I mean, potentially. But if you're doing that, you're playing it early. And the storm player is just not going to go off that turn because you're not going to do it like in the middle of them trying to go off. Then I mean, GW hexproof. I mean, it's just god awful against that. And God help us, it's one of the best decks in Modern right now. Even though it's one of the most boring and awful decks to play against.
I'm going to put on 7 pairs of pants.
Yeah. Oh God. You watch that deck, it's like, oh my God, there's like no skill here. And it's just awful. And I'm sorry, GW hexproof player who loves their bogles. And I mean, but that's the epitome of I'm dropping someone with hexproof. And then I'm gonna put every little thing I have on it as quickly as possible. Did I win? I mean that's it. I'm sorry. Maybe I'm oversimplifying the deck, but I really don't think so.
I actually think what puts Bogles over the top is Daybreak Coronet, because Daybreak Coronet has been a card in the deck for a long time. And basically Daybreak Coronet is you can only enchant, it's an enchantment, and you can only enchant a creature that's already been enchanted, and it gains lifelink. I think I should have just had it pulled up. I'm an idiot.
It gains 3+3 and lifelink. And vigilance?
We're professionals.
It says when he comes in the battlefield, you will play a boring game of Magic that no one's going to enjoy. But you'll at this point in the meta, you will actually probably win. So congratulations, you get a few more packs.
Yeah.
Do I say salty? That's a little too salty. That's like merfolk in like the Dead Sea salty.
All right, yeah. Daybreak Coronet is white, enchant creature with another aura attached to it. Enchanted creature gets +3/+3 and has first strike, vigilance, and lifelink. And it's got a cat with a scarf on it, which is the best part of the card.
Hey, Kitty Scarf, or what's up?
It has Brian King of the Oreos on it. my boy, Brian King of the Oreos. I played in a 4-of in a standard soldiers deck. I love Brian. Me and Brian go way back. But anywho,
it's not against good against those kind of decks. It's not great against burn. Any sorcery.
I disagree. I think it's actually really fairly good against burn because it shuts off Eidolon of the Great Revel.
For a turn, yeah.
Yeah, but sometimes that's all you need. You just need you need to fire off a bunch of stuff and.
But Eidolon's a state based effect, so you're going to take the initial 2 damage from casting the Trickster.
Yeah, but that's it.
So you have to have enough mana, or so you're going to get one free. You're saving 2 damage essentially at that point, because most likely playing Merfolk, you're only going to have enough mana to play one more thing, or you'll have the your vial. So
yeah, fair. I mean, because you can just vial around the. I have played games of Legacy or against Legacy Burn where I basically just had to sit back and wait on my vial.
Against Burn is probably not the worst, but it's still not great.
It's not. Yeah, it's not pushing the needle in any fashion. Yeah.
You might be sideboarding him out.
It turns off. The one drop goblin.
Yeah, goblin guide.
Yeah, goblin guide.
So when he attacks, you don't get
he can't attack because he's tapped.
Yeah, but he costs 1 and Merfolk Trickster costs 2, so he's most likely already out.
Yeah, that's fair.
So you just wouldn't get your land.
Good point. I've actually won a lot of games against Burn off of Goblin why can't I remember his name? It's right in front of me. You just said it.
Goblin guide.
Goblin guide. Yeah, I don't know why I couldn't say that, but I have one game off lets of
direction.
Yeah, yeah. Well, that's fair.
He is a goblin.
Yeah, he's pretty good. But I have lost. I have won games because I was kind of low on lands, and then I was like swinging, and I was like, ha ha. You know, it's like an island, and then I play the island, and then I play creatures and spells, and it's great. That's there, you need lands.
There's nothing better as a Tron player than to get into Tron based on the Goblin Guide. It's like, aha, thank you very much.
You're like, tower, don't mind if I do. Totally fine.
With my Wurmcoil in hand, which is the only way I'll ever win this game.
Some other decks that it might be a little bit difficult to know what to hit is probably like Counters Company.
Yeah.
I think
it's just so wide and everything's an issue.
Yeah, that deck, there's just, I mean, I honestly don't, probably the, what is the card in that deck that makes it so that it's the white creature that makes it so it things don't get -1/-1 counters?
Malaria?
No, it's from Amonkhet. It's from Amonkhet.
The druid combo, right?
Yeah.
Devoted druids, the green creature. Oh man, professional show here.
Yeah, we're definitely
professional. Professional show. And it's the Visor Remedies.
Visor of Remedies. So that might be the target, or Viscerous Seer, but I mean, you know, just
yeah. I mean, potentially on the cast.
Yeah,
like if they're casting Vizier of Remedies, you in response cast the Merfolk Trickster on their Devoted Druid, so they can't go infinite that turn, which again buys you a turn. So that might be.
So
you can do it on their what's the dude called, the werewolf that lets them go through their whole deck. I don't care that guy.
But yeah, I mean it's definitely, but
we're so far off in the woods of not knowing the card names at this point that it just doesn't matter.
Yeah, and but it's definitely, like I said, if you're gonna be playing Merfolk Trickster, which I personally believe that you should, it's definitely something to consider, you know, what's in your meta. You know, what types of decks are you playing against? We could pretty much just sit here and name off decks and talk about like what cards it's good against, but obviously you guys have valuable time and we don't want to just sit here and talk endlessly about it.
And not know the names of cards.
Yes, and we're sitting here not knowing the names of anything, so we're about as useful as a drunk know-it-all at the bar.
Or just as useful as a pair of a boggle with seven pairs of pants.
I want fan art of a boggle with seven pairs of pants. I think that would just be pretty awesome. Maybe we could make it our unofficial mascot is just a boggle, like with his tongue sticking out through the zipper, like through the zipper hole.
That's some good mind art right there. That is some very good mind art.
Yeah, it's not suggestive of anything. We're a family friendly show.
So, Cody, I did have one question for you. So you're adding Merfolk Trickster in. I think you said a playset, correct?
That's correct. Well, I think that when you test a card like Merfolk Trickster, you should run the four of, because you want to see it as much as you can in testing.
So just as important of putting a new card in, what's getting the axe?
So in my list, what I cut was two Harbinger of the Tides and two Mirror Reageries. Now that may not be correct, but for me it's just about playing with the cards and seeing the interactions.
So you're keeping your place at a Curse Catchers then?
For the present, I am, because I don't want to make as many changes as I can, because I want to see the effect of how Merfolk Trickster is doing currently. I think I know Nikachu's been off Curse Catcher for a little bit. Curse Catcher is definitely one of the things that could feasibly go, I think.
Yeah.
But it's something that, like I said, I'm wanting to see how, you know, because of how my deck ran in the past, I want to see how closely it runs, you know, in a similar environment.
Fair.
I also think this deck, Merfolk Trickster would be good in the Collected Company version of blue-green merfolk.
Tropical merfolk?
Yeah, but or you could just say blue-green merfolk like a regular human.
Or you could say tropical because it's more fun.
Yeah, tropical is very fun. But so with tropical merfolk, again, what you want to do is you want to be activating your Cocos prior to combat. so you get full effect of off of any additional blockers or lords or merfolk tricksters, because obviously it doesn't work when you play it during combat.
And you're gonna have a bad time.
Well, I take that back. It does work during combat. It just doesn't work as well as you don't want to target their Death Shadow while it's swinging. Like that's you're gonna have a bad time.
Exactly.
I mean, target their Tarmogoyf while it's attacking. That's fine. At that
point, you're probably not gonna be playing him.
Yeah. So I mean, that's pretty much it for our show this week. Do you feel good about this one, Matt?
I do. I'm curious to see where he's gonna go. And I want to hear what other people have to say. What are you guys sideboarding out? What are you guys taking out of your decks to put Merfolk Trickster in? How has he played for you? Is he main board? Is he sideboard? Is he just box fodder? Let us know.
Yeah, I don't think he's quite box fodder, but I do think, you know, like I said, I think I've been a little bit higher on it than you have, but. It's still yet to be seen, you know, what it can all do. So,
I mean, I hope he's awesome because again, and any time that somebody plays him, I'm going to start singing Run DMC. I'm going to be that guy at Friday Night Magic that anybody who plays Merfolk, I'm going to be standing there just over top of him, like squirming, like do it, do it, do it. It's free to rock around.
One other thing before we get into our outro roll, we had a really cool thing happen to us on Twitter. We have lots of really cool things on Twitter. Follow us at FishcastMTG on there and have discussions with us. We love talking with y'all. But we had a really cool fan of the show, Saharu, at Saharu Sosa, S-A-H-U-A-R-O, Sosa. He said... He's an artist, and he did a sketch of some merfolk that we, you know, we like to showcase things that people do about merfolk because it's kind of cool. It's a cool little community, and he likes our show, and he did something really cool. He made some custom merfolk tokens. They're pretty cool little tokens, and we'll put the Dropbox link to them. I mean, you could tell he worked pretty hard on these. Like these are pretty sweet.
They were absolutely awesome. I mean, and the cool thing is that he did provide just the Dropbox link, so you just print them off and you can use them. So thank you.
Yeah, thank you. And we encourage people on the show, or sorry, people on the show. People on the show is us.
And we're the people.
Yeah, we're the people on the show. What are the odds?
You could be the people on the show with a $10 donation, though.
Yes, at patreon.com/fishcastmtg. You support us at the $10 level. You get to come on the show and talk to us about how much you like or dislike merfolk. I mean, it's really up to you. But if you print out these tokens, snap a picture and tag us in it, and tag Saharu Sosa in there as well, so that way, you know, he gets some love because, you know, he put his sweat and tears into these merfolk tokens, and which actually remind me of a character from my childhood watching homestarrunner.com. There's a character called the Poop Smith, and I think he actually kind of looks pretty similar. I really enjoyed it. It was like a good little throwback in my brain. But so, I mean, we pretty much hit everything there. Remember to follow us again on Twitter, Instagram, Facebook is at FishcastMTG. Personally, I'm at NotCodySmith on Twitter, and Matt is MatthewsCotto8. If you have a longer form question or any other sort of inquiry for the show, let's say you own you're the owner of a Shoney's franchise and you want to reach out to us for a sponsorship deal, feel free. We're accepting all possible Shoney's sponsorship. What are those things? Contract. Yeah, contract. We'll sign that in a heartbeat to advertise. We won't even read it. Speaking of Shoney's,
say, give me your soul and be like, okay, Shoney's.
Yeah, okay, Shoney's. Speaking of Shoney's, Mother's Day is coming up, and there's no way to show your mother that you love her than taking her out to a fine breakfast at your local Shoney's. It's heartwarming. We want to end it on a positive note.
If you don't take your mother to Shoney's for Mother's Day, you're an awful child, and you deserve the worst things in life.
Also, tag us in all pictures of you eating at your local Shoney's. We'd love to post those up on Twitter. They haven't responded to us yet, but they will. Oh, they will. Our cover art was made by Tessa and Hunter Pruitt. And if you like what we're doing here, please rate and subscribe in the Apple or Google Play podcast apps or wherever you find your podcasts. And remember that you can support us at patreon.com. It's patreon.com/fishcastmtg. That's where you can support us monetarily if you feel that our content has helped you pass the time or whittle away the hours on a spring afternoon, while you're whittling something.
While you're avoiding the sun.
Yeah, while you're avoiding the sun. Thank you very much, everybody, for your time and joining us this week. And we will see you next week.
Have a good night, guys.
Yo, Lee, what's up, man? Run DMC, man. Ready to rock the house.
Run DMC, Jessica? No.